Our last brief overview before we go into the cases will be Dr. Rosemary Kosar from the University of Maryland talking about acute respiratory failure.
Good morning, everybody. I realize that I sort of took a very literal definition of my topic, so I'm going to make this very, very practical sort of start, you know, the minute you might get called about a patient and sort of take you through the end. So we're going to start with a case. This is a 57-year-old male who's 6 days after laparoscopic colon resection for diverticulitis. You're called in the middle of the night to come evaluate this patient. Patient's hypotensive, tachycardic, febrile, hypoxic with a SAT of 86% on 15 liters. They're tachypneic. They have increased work of breathing. They're using all these accessory muscles. They just look bad. So you just heard how to resuscitate this patient, which sounds like they're in sepsis. And we're going to sort of concentrate on the respiratory aspects of this. So the first thing you have to decide is what mode you're going to put them on. So, you decide, okay, this patient needs intubated, you know, kind of the now what. And that's what we're going to talk about. And there's all kind of different modes. Everybody's got their favorite. There's volume controlled, the traditional AC, there's IMV. On the opposite side of the slide, you have some pressure modes, pressure control, APRV. In the middle, we got kind of a combo, PRVC. There's a new mode, PAV. So there's all these different things. So, you know, my suggestion, if someone is really sick and you're just, you know, kind of walking in, you know, a very traditional AC mode is nice and safe. You can just put them on volume control and get things started. So you get the patient intubated, you get this chest x-ray, you see these bilateral fluffy diffuse infiltrates, the patient's hypoxic, you start them out on a FiO2 of 100%, you get this ABG. You've got a pH of 7.25, they're hypercarbic at 56, they're hypoxic at 79, and their saturations are 89%. So you know you're supposed to calculate your P to F ratio, the PaO2 over the FiO2, and you get 79. And you may not remember the exact specifics of what category, but you know that you're not happy. So this is the Berlin criteria, the latest definition of the different degrees of ARDS. So your patient meets the definition of ARDS, and you're trying to decide sort of what category they are. Here's it a little bit bigger. And you can see that your patient that has a P to F ratio of 79 fits the criteria for severe ARDS. Okay, so now you know what they got, and you got things started, and now what do you do? Okay, so once you got things intubated and started, you have to think about lung protective strategies. So this was, it's amazing how fast time goes, how long ago this actually was that the ARDSnet discovered lung protective strategies. And so sort of the ballpark, if you got to get things started, just remember about 6 mL per kilo. So you want to do this. It's called ideal body weight, but the new term now is predicted body weight. So it's not how much a patient actually weighs, it's how much they should weigh. So based purely on their height. So it's ideal or predicted body weight. And you're going to start their tidal volume at about 6 mL per kilogram. And kind of the range is around 4 to 8. Then after you do that, you want to look at the pressures on their ventilator, their plateau pressures. If it's greater than 30, then you need to do something to fix that. So the two lung protective strategies are their lower tidal volume. At the same time, you want to make sure that their plateau pressures aren't exceedingly high. And there's not enough time to go into that, but these are, you know, if someone's plateau pressures are really high, sometimes that's when you want to switch over to the pressure control modes. Okay, so what are your sort of goals when you do this? So you want a PaO2, and it doesn't have to be great. You want a SAT somewhere between 88 and 95%. You want the plateau pressures less than 30, and you want, you know, a kind of normal pH, knowing that sometimes you may have to accept a lower pH with permissive hypercapnia. Now, I always used to kind of get freaked out about someone saturating 88, 90% on the ventilator until I kind of got intrigued by this mountain climbing and reading all these books and seeing all these movies. And if you start to, read some of these books and listen to these guys, they're really, really, really hypoxic for a really long time. Just a few months ago, one of my husband's friends was climbing to base camp and was kind of like putting out this little blog. And I had no idea how hypoxic these really good athletes are just getting to base camp. And it sort of makes you realize it's okay to have a saturation of 90% or even 88% if you have to. Now, the bad part about being sick and having a lower saturation is, you know, you're sort of on the very steep part of the curve. And so the problem is you just don't have any reserve. So it's not what we want, but it's nothing to, you know, it's okay. It's okay to have a little bit lower saturation while you're kind of getting things going. So what's the next thing you do? So you look at the patient and, you know, are they having increased work of breathing? It's amazing how many times, you know, you get called and you walk in and someone's tachypneic and struggling and, you know, so you want to give them adequate sedation. And, you know, that may mean a narcotic. It may mean whatever your sedative that you guys use in your institution. Some places use propofol, some use benzodiazepines, but you want to adequately sedate the patient so that you're doing the work of breathing for them as you're kind of getting them over this initial insult. Sometimes that means that you need to do early neuromuscular blockade. It's got a really bad rap for a while there, and it's not something you want to do all the time. It's not something you want to do for 2 weeks at a time, but if you need to, it's okay. And sometimes I just give one dose, you know, just to kind of get things started for me while I'm sort of figuring things out, maybe optimizing some other parameters. And this was just a study looking at the early use of neuromuscular blockade in ARDS that showed that the early use for a short period of time, and here is the 48 hours with cisatricurium, is actually safe. This study decreased mortality and time on the ventilator. This always makes me laugh when I read this because I've used other, particularly the intubating drugs, when you do like, you know, vecuronium or rocuronium, and you sort of forget that the patient's in renal failure, and you learn to appreciate how long these agents can last when you forget that. So cisatricurium is a nice one because it is it's okay to use in someone who's got renal failure or liver dysfunction. Okay, so now you got your patient intubated, you got them on the ventilator, you got them sedated, maybe you got them paralyzed. So what next? What if they're still not doing good? So what's your sort of, you're going to kind of go up this little ladder of what things I need to do. So the next thing that you can think about doing is prone positioning, been shown to be beneficial in moderate to severe ARDS. And one of the CME questions here is the study here, and the teaching is that you should do it for at least 16 hours a day. So it's not just, you know, flip them over for 5 minutes type of thing. It does require, you know, some nursing staff. It requires, you know, your input. It requires some time. It requires a lot of attention to safety, but it certainly is possible to do and is beneficial to your patient. Now, I haven't talked a lot about PEEP just because it's kind of hard to summarize, and it's a very, there's not like a great answer, but the bottom line is PEEP is good. You start PEEP early. There's all these nomograms for this PaO2, put them on this PEEP, but, you know, kind of in general, if someone's crumping, you know, a nice number is just kind of start around 10, 12, and it's okay to go up. So PEEP is not a bad thing. And you just need to think about that, adding that. So, you know, if your patient isn't doing well, that's one of the other things. In addition, you know, you look at the FiO2, you're going to look at your lung protective strategies. And, you know, you're thinking about proning the patient, sedating the patient. And you also want to think about increasing your PEEP. So all this stuff still doesn't work. What are some other things, if you're really kind of not kind of down there and going up this steep ladder? You know, there are a number of recruitment maneuvers. Some people would consider APRV a recruitment maneuver. Some other people might consider it your initial therapy of choice. But it is a good way to recruit. And if you need to do an alternative mode, this is something to think about. Do keep in mind, if you switch to APRV, that it is going to increase your intrathoracic pressure. And if the patient is not adequately resuscitated, they will absolutely become hypotensive. So you just need to be cognizant of that. There are some pulmonary vasodilators like nitric oxide, not great data to use them for just ARDS, but, you know, sometimes with patients with bad pulmonary hypertension, it's just another option. And then there's always ECMO, you know, kind of, again, we're going to our up and up our ladder of what things we need to think about doing. This is the CSER trial, which is the sort of the most recent one that sort of looked at ECMO that showed a benefit, but it wasn't necessarily a benefit to ECMO as much as being transferred to an ECMO center, just where people sort of deal with these very sick patients with severe ARDS. I just put these criteria up here. I just found this on our guidelines. We actually have a lung rescue unit at Shock Trauma, and this is the criteria to at least, you know, to think about ECMO, to kind of call the team in. And even if you're not at a place that has it, there are some places maybe nearby that have a transport unit, but it's just things to think about. If they're profoundly hypoxic on a lot of FiO2, if you can't control their plateau pressures, if you can't ventilate them. But importantly, it's not someone that's had ARDS for 3 weeks. It's not the person you want to do it on. Most places don't do it on the very elderly patients. It's got to be something reversible that you can get them over, because remember, this is just a temporary form, you know, and something individualized. But again, just something to think about. And just to put it out there, so what, you know, kind of what's next, there is some work with stem cell therapy. This is just a phase one trial by Mike Mathey at San Francisco, where they looked at the stem cells for ARDS. They've completed a phase two trial. I didn't see the results don't appear to be published that I could find. There is a phase three trial that they're doing. And I know, Mitch, your center, you were at San Francisco, this was started. They're looking at the treatment of stem cells for trauma patients with ARDS. So I think in the future, we may have some other things in our armamentarium. And lastly, hopefully at the end of this, your patient's chest x-ray looks like this. And I appreciate your attention. Thank you.